Hello, everyone. Welcome to Pep Talk, Pepperdine University's podcast dedicated to sparking conversations of personal and global significance, featuring world-renowned professors, faculty, and students from across the university. In this Pep Talk series, we will be discussing relationships. Whether you are single or married, a parent or a grandparent, a professional or an executive, relationships are an essential part of our lives. Join us as we explore how to build relationships and navigate their challenges in today's world. Hello, and welcome back to the Pep Learn podcast. My name is Alexa, and I am your host today, along with Kobe.
Hey, everybody. Good to be here.
It's good to be back. Today, we have back on the podcast Dr. Kelly Hare, and she is the executive director for the Boone Center for the Family and oversees the Relationship IQ program. So before we get into it, today we are going to talk about singleness. Now, we talked about dating, we talked about marriage, but really we wanted to circle back into singleness as the special season that it is. I read a quick stat that in 2023, over 42% of adults were unpartnered, which is down a little bit from 2019, 44%. So it's definitely a season that a lot of us are in. I know young adults are in it, but also older folks are in it as well. So I think it's good that we can unpack it a little bit today. So Kelly, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Alexa. It's good to be here. And singleness is a topic that is really important to me and a part of my own story in getting married, what I will call later, getting married at age 33. So happy to be here talking about singleness today.
Well, to start off, what are some of the biggest cultural myths that we see or pressures surrounding singleness?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think some singles, particularly singles in the church, can feel like it's not okay to express discontentment or disappointment with being single, that they feel like they have to put a positive spin to it kind of no matter what. I think that's a myth, and that it's okay to grieve singleness. It's okay to be not happy being single. Another myth that's out there is that all singles are unhappy, and that's not true. Some singles are single by choice and very pleased to be single. Another myth that's out there is there's always a reason someone is single. And sometimes there can be a number of reasons why a person is single, but not necessarily.
Yeah. I think on my end, a lot of my friends are single, including myself at the moment. Maybe not by the time this podcast is out. Who knows?
There you go.
We'll see.
Best of luck.
Thank you. But I think, you know, along with what you were saying about, you know, there's a reason someone is single, I know a lot of people who are single, who aren't looking to be single, you know, who are just amazing women and young men who are single. And it's just, it's interesting that there are so many myths around it. I don't know. Kobe, do you want to share any myths that you see around single?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think if I had to summarize, especially in the world of the church, and maybe more so in the Midwest than I'm from, where I'm from, than out here on the coast. But in general, I think in the church world, there seems to be this expectation that marriage and family life is the norm. It's not a bad thing that we elevate marriage and family life. These are good things. These are gifts from God. These are important things. But that these are normative, and that if you're a single, you're kind of in this sort of weird side category that we don't know what to do with. And we kind of help you however we can, but you're kind of the oddball, I think, is sort of almost less the actual script than just sort of the like subconscious feeling that a lot of singles get.
And I think the church and people who are older, loosely defined, that they struggle to know how to relate with and engage with singles is because more and more people are single than when those quote older people were younger. And that today, 25% of 40-year-olds are single. And this is single, never married.
Yeah. Wow.
Whereas in 1980, so 45 years ago, 6% were.
That's
We've gone from 6% to 25%. That's a significant jump. And so I think people aren't accustomed to knowing kind of how it is to relate with and incorporate singles into community because it's somewhat of a newer phenomenon to have as many people single as there are today.
So what do you think, what role do family expectations and peer comparisons play in shaping how we experience singleness? I know we just briefly discussed the church.
Yeah, I think familial and peer comparisons are really significant in shaping a person's perspective and expectation for themselves. Unless someone is kind of on the other continuum, they're reacting to, let's say their parents got married really young and it went poorly, then they might be reacting to that and saying like, I don't want to get married young. From my own story, my parents got married young right after college. My mom did college in 3 years and got married. And the same was actually true for my sister. She did college in 3 years and got married as well. Older sister, I should say. And so I think that really shaped my perspective and expectation of what should be in my own life. So I think people's families and broader peer communities really can shape their expectation for marriage. So if you're a part of a peer group and your friends are increasingly getting married, I think you more start to look at yourself and say, oh, I should be. Why isn't this happening for me?
Always the bridesmaid, never the bride.
Right, right. Versus if you're in a group of friends where people aren't so much getting married, you may be less attuned to the fact that you're single.
Maybe share a little bit. I'm curious to see what students at Pepperdine with the Relationship IQ series, what's the topics of conversation with some of the younger adults?
Yes. Well, I think a defining feature of the singleness conversation on college campuses is related to the imbalanced gender ratios, where you have significantly more women than men at a level of 60-40. This is true at Pepperdine, but this is that's par for the course around the country. Pepperdine is exceptional and special in lots of ways, I like to say, but that's not one of them. That is, that's how it is. And so, you know, singleness on college campuses, women are often saying, oh, there aren't enough men around, I'm not going to find a person. It's like, yeah, because if everybody were still paired, if every man were dating someone, there would be many, many, many women who were not. And so all men aren't dating someone is all the more so. So I think that's a common feature among singleness.
Could you, I know you have a lot of research about this, but maybe you could share how people view singleness as an ambiguous loss. Is that how you describe it in your research?
Yes. Yes. So my dissertation research was on understanding singleness as an ambiguous loss for those singles who want to be married. And it's just important to say loud and clear, not everyone who's single wants to be married, but for the person who does, my research showed quantitatively that singles do experience singleness as an ambiguous loss. So we've got to say, what is an ambiguous loss? There's two types. And one is involved where you've got a person who is physically absent, but psychologically present. And this is the same type of loss as if someone goes missing in action or a child who's missing, where the person is physically absent, but they're psychologically present and alive in someone's mind.
Interesting. Yeah.
And the ambiguity, the lack of clarity around what is lost, is this person going to be found or not, is really hard to live with. And it's associated with higher rates of anxiety and depression. And so that's what's going on for the single person who wants to be married.
Yeah.
The missing person is alive in their mind and they could be found tomorrow.
Are they ever going to come along?
Or never. And there's never going to be clarity if that person's going to be found.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And so it's really hard to navigate that.
I find that can be such a, I mean, I feel like that's a unique problem for so many people, but especially in the church. I often hear when, you know, talking to my friends or consoling them, it's like, oh, God put that desire on your heart for a reason. So that means it's going to come true. And I'm just,
That might increase the feeling
of ambiguous loss, in my opinion.
We live in a broken world. Things don't always work out the way they're supposed to.
Prince Charming may not come.
Can we talk to that specifically for a second? And maybe Kelly, just give you the floor to address, how actually, as Christians, how should we be viewing singleness, right? Yeah. Is it a good thing? Is it a loss? Is it God will provide the person someday? Is it none of the above or somewhere in between?
Yeah, for someone who wants to be married, and God has created us for a relationship, he's given us desires for relationship. This includes romantic relationships, the commitment of marriage. And for someone who wants to be married and is alive to this good longing in their heart, singleness is a grief. It is a loss. And now the good and great news is that as Christians, we grieve differently than others, that we grieve with hope. And so we can be alive to the pain and loss of not having a partner, a spouse present, and we can trust that God is still good. He is still on his throne. He has a good plan and purpose for our life. Our life is not meaningless. We are not without value just because we're not married. Right. But we are freed up to grieve and be honest with the pain of unmet longings while also being alive to hope in Christ, and that we do have good purpose that God has laid out for us and be alive to the other good things in our life at the same time, whether it's work or other friendships or family relationships. We can be alive to those good things, and we don't have to idolize the pain of singleness and make our whole lives about that loss.
I think that's a really good kind of balance that I hear in what you're saying there, in that you don't have to deny the pain and pretend this isn't a loss and pretend that it's all hunky-dory. And on the other hand, you don't want to idolize the pain, and keep it from allowing you to become the person you're created to be, because you're so stuck in the pain of not having something that you want to have.
Right. And it's really easy to fall on either side and deny the pain of singleness or only live in it. So it's a good prayer to ask God to help me live in this middle space of grief with hope.
Well, and could we talk practically about that for a second? Just in the sense that I think everyone who's a listener, unless you're out there and you're already married, everyone's going to go through a season of singleness at some point, whether it's a month or whether it's for years. And so from a practical point of view, this is a hard thing. It's a loss. In some ways, it's a blessing. What does it look like to actually be doing singleness well? How does someone actually walk that out and make the most of it rather than falling into the ditch on either side, if you will?
It's a great question. I think it's being able to recognize different dynamics that are a part of singleness, such as there often is more freedom to make choices that aren't constricted by a spouse or children. So there's more kind of freedom for what you do, how you live, and leaning into that and embracing the goodness of that.
That's me moving to California. I probably never would have come out here, right, as a 26-year-old single at the time. It was much easier to make the jump to move across the country and go on an adventure than if I was taking a wife and kids along with me. I might have done it if I felt like it was the right move, but it would have been a much more difficult decision to make.
Right. And so in singleness, you might be able to pour more of yourself into work or hobbies or interests than otherwise you would. But at the same time, you want to be careful that you don't pour yourself into work to the extent that you're not leaving any space or margin to meet people and grow a relationship, a dating relationship to marriage.
And I think this is a hard thing too. I think even this kind of connects to one of our other episodes on workplace relationships, but I think there's interesting dynamics sometimes too, in that as a single person, it's sometimes really hard to figure out how to align your priorities, right? Because if you're married with kids, it's really obvious that that should be your first priority above work.
Right.
Right. And that if it isn't, then something's off. And workplace policies exist to align with this, right? Maternity leave, paternity leave, these kinds of things that are supposed to allow you to be a whole person, to be a good husband or wife or father or mother, as opposed to just a worker, right? As a single person, it's a little harder sometimes to discern, okay, is work the most important thing in my life? Like how do friendships rank in comparison to work? Or how do my hobbies rank in comparison to work? How should I be prioritizing things?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think of the importance of singles pursuing both mutual and supportive relationships robustly. So I'm going to tie this back. In singleness, if a person is struggling and wanting to be married, they could value and have greater support in their life. Somebody who's listening to them, processing, walking alongside them in this difficulty. So being sure that you're giving care and attention to this part of yourself, and then also really prioritizing mutual relationships that are give and take, and you're investing in friendships, and especially long-term relationships, because that's what marriage is ultimately. It's a long-term relationship. And so over the long term, we are to be known by a person over time can be really valuable and important. And so in a workplace, priorities, being sure to prioritize those long-term relationships. So making it a point to be present at birthdays or significant achievements of other people in your life who are important to you, whether this is a friend's kids or your friend or extended family, that you're still giving space in your life to prioritize and be present to people who are meaningful to you and not just feeling like, oh, well, they're not my spouse or my kids, so I shouldn't or can't take this time for them. Even one thing, you think of people who are married, and if a spouse or their kids are sick, they're taking a day off of work to care for them. What is it if a single person has a roommate who is sick and needs care?
Yeah, that's
is there
really
space for deprioritizing work at that moment and saying, no, I need to be there to care for this roommate? No, they're not my spouse or children, but they are a very significant person in my life.
Yeah, that is interesting. Because yeah, you wouldn't necessarily think of a person calling in from work in the same way. And yet that really is that's the equivalent. This is the equivalent. This is the closest relational person in my life. And they don't have a spouse. They need someone there. Yeah. Fascinating.
What's the difference between aloneness and loneliness?
I think loneliness is undesired aloneness. yes. You know, I think loneliness for the single person who desires marriage is going to be there. And the healthier, more robust relationships, friendships, other family relationships that the single person has will help to diminish the loneliness. But the other family relationships and friendships, I don't think a single person should expect that they're going to 100% cover up the loneliness that can be present in singleness.
And so alternatively, like, what are some healthy ways as a single person to build deep friendships and connections outside of this unfulfilled romantic desire?
Yeah, so when you think about the pathway for marriage and family, there are certain rites of passage, moments of celebration that are kind of built into that pathway. When someone gets engaged, there's an engagement party. There's a wedding shower. There's the wedding. There's the baby showers. There's the kid's birthday.
There's so many showers these days.
There's so many showers. There's all of these moments that are built in. So for singles, what is it to invite people in to celebrate significant moments in your life, whether it's a work promotion or let's say you're competing in a triathlon? Having people there, inviting people in to significant moments in your life. And on the flip side, if you're a married person, what is it for you to pay attention to the significant moments in the single person's life and move towards them with celebration and presence of yourself and inviting others to celebrate and join together? So I think really being intentional about inviting people in to your life, people who are married, people who are single.
I think about two intergenerational friendships.
Yes.
Know, especially within the church.
Yes.
For me, I think personally, I work at a church on the weekends, but my family lives on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. All my close family are just around, and I'm so close with older folks at my church. They kind of fill that space as a mentor.
Yes.
Even just showing me like what like a healthy like marriage looks like.
Yes.
You know, I think that's so important.
Yes.
Building those relationships.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's really valuable when marrieds and singles connect with each other and when people who are married are willing to share and be honest about the challenges and struggles in marriage and not feeling like they have to present marriage as all perfect or easy or something like that to the single person or feeling like they can't kind of, I don't like the word gripe or complain, but they can't share difficulties in their marriage with the single person out of fear that the single person is just going to be like, oh, I wish I was married and not have space for them.
Yeah.
But it's good when both people who are married and single can be honest and share about the joys and the challenges of both.
When I think it's important too, in some ways, if you're a single person to sort of reframe in that it's easy. And I think this probably falls into the idolizing the pain ditch that we talked about earlier. It's easy to feel like you are incomplete as a person because you don't have this romantic relationship that you want, right? Whereas I think actually, right, there are still things that you're called to. There are still things that God has made you for.
Absolutely.
There are still things through relationships with other people that may not take away the loneliness, but that will make you not completely alone in it. And I think furthermore, right, if you're viewing marriage as this thing that's going to ultimately fulfill you as a person, you're going to be really disappointed.
You're going to be really disappointed if it comes along. Absolutely.
Right. If you don't have some sense before this that, no, like, I am made for something. I'm called yes. for so, I'm called to something yes. and another person isn't going to complete me.
Yeah. So marriage is made of two healthy, whole, single people, mm. two individuals who are healthy and whole on themselves coming together. Marriage does not complete a person. And yet at the same time, there is someone missing mm-hmm. from someone's life who desires to be married, but it's not going to complete them or make them whole. I think there's a bit of a paradox mm. in understanding how that works.
Yeah. Yeah.
That we can't think like, oh, my life, I'm going to be a better person when I have a spouse. You need to be who you are now.
Yeah. And yeah, I think to your point, the marriage will be much healthier and much more joyful if you're not having that expectation coming in.
Yes.
Right. That when it is two whole people, it reminds me in some ways of our last episode with Didi on workplace relationships, where if you're willing to bring your whole self into a workplace disagreement, everyone's going to benefit.
Right.
Right. Whereas if you only are willing to kind of bring half of yourself, right, you're not willing to say what you really think, then no one kind of benefits. I think in an analogous way, right, two whole people who, yes, recognize the loss, but also do view themselves as in some sense complete and called in the paradox that you're talking
yeah,
about. That
yeah.
marriage is going to be a lot healthier than some sort of a codependent
right.
thing.
That they need this other person to fix, save, or rescue
yeah, yeah.
them.
So before yeah. we wrap it up today, what are some practical tips for our listeners who are experiencing singleness, for living well as a single? Maybe what are some practices or disciplines that can help one live fully and intentionally?
I think it's really pursuing healthy relationships, pursuing both support, if singleness is a challenge for a person, and pursuing two-way street relationships where you're really going deep with a person, mm-hmm. with a friend, and again, focusing on keeping and maintaining long-term relationships. There's just a lot of value in being known over the long haul in mm-hmm. different seasons of life and really I think it's valuable even when you're married to really pay attention to and keep up with friends and extended family over the long term, but all the more so in singleness.
Yeah. I personally would echo what you said and just really invest in those friendships who have been there for you. Make new friends, do things on your own, but try to avoid those negative yeah. seasons yeah. of loneliness.
Yeah, and I would add too, I think really wrestling to not live in either ditch of denying the pain of singleness or idolizing it if you want and you long for marriage, because I will say I have seen a number of friends who have minimized their desire for marriage. And I think the stagnation of their dating lives reflect that they are, that pain sometimes is helpful and it's what we need yeah. to be alive to and connected to pain, to drive us to reach out and to connect and be vulnerable and take risks. Now, on the other hand, again, if we're idolizing pain and we're only living in that ditch, that's not going to be helpful
yeah.
either.
But
so
yeah,
really if, wrestling
yeah,
to find
that. If you minimize
and
you're
space,
never willing to get out there and yeah. you just think, oh, maybe Prince Charming's
going to show up.
Probably not going to show up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And we pursue other things in life. Mm-hmm. So why should this be different?
You want to know more about how to do that? Well, just scroll a few episodes up.
I was thinking that, yes.
Click on our
dating
episode.
Yeah. I'll plug Venice Run Club one more time before,
there you go.
Before we call it off. Well, thank you so much, Kelly, for your wisdom and insights. And if you listeners are interested, please make sure to subscribe to the podcast and check out the Boone Center's Relationship IQ series. And that is it today for our episode on singleness. We will see you next time. Thank you all.